Okay, ladies and gentlemen, tonight's topic we're calling Malachim 2, Chapter 4, which is, as you know, a very catchy title. And what we're going to focus on are some episodes that involve the miracles of Elisha. Now, Elisha becomes a Navi who is more of a miracle doer. Now this sort of goes against something that I've said many times, which is that Jews don't really believe in the power of miracles all that much, no? Frida always corrects me because I always get the title of this book wrong, but C.S. Lewis has a book called On Miracles or something.
I think it's just called Miracles.
Oh, yeah, every time I get it wrong.
Okay.
I call it this one.
The last time you mentioned it, I pulled it out of the shelf.
Basically, you know, in the Christian faith, miracles are really important. In Judaism, we tend to downplay miracles a lot. Right? Our approach is that Moshe Rabbeinu was not believed because he did miracles, but we believe in Moshe Rabbeinu because we all heard Hashem speak to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai, etc. So our belief in Moshe Rabbeinu is not predicated on miracles, and we largely play down miracles, right? In other words, we have a Navi Sheker, who the Torah tells us can do miracles. Right? So just because you do miracles doesn't mean you're anything so amazing. Yet when we read about Elisha, and I read chapter 4 of Kings 2, so I see that what Elisha is doing is miracle after miracle. The first episode involves this woman who says that, like, we're so poor and the lender is going to take my children away. So Elisha says, what do you have at home? We'll go through it in greater detail in a few minutes. Oh, a little bit of oil. We'll borrow kalim, borrow vessels from everybody. Pour the oil. Doesn't stop. Right? Miracle! She has money and, right, she's able to stay alive. Right?
I'm troubled by what you just said, because every morning we say Azar Shir.
Huh?
We say Azar Shir, so isn't it?
So Azar Shir is, I would say like this, I'm not saying there are no miracles, I'm saying though that of course there are miracles, but our belief is not predicated on miracles, and to a certain extent we try to downplay miracles, which is something that we're going to be talking about in a few minutes,
okay.
Our approach to downplaying miracles. But what we see with Elisha is that Elisha seems to be the miracle man. First episode involves the oil. Second episode involves Elisha goes to Shunem, and there's a great woman in Shunem who takes care of Elisha, and she builds him a little room, and right, eventually he says, oh, you'll have a baby boy. They have a boy. Boy dies. She runs to Elisha. Right, first Gehazi tries to revive him. It don't work. Then Elisha revives him. So there are two miracles in this story. Baby's born. Baby is revived. Right? Now, what's the purpose in the miracles? Why do we have all these miracles of Elisha? Right? And then we also have, at the end of the Perek, we have two stories, Pasuk Lamed Ches until the end. Again, this week I did not give the English translation, so I don't know, I was trying to rush. So, Perek Lamed Ches until the end of the Perek, they're basically the students, the B'nai HaNevi'im are hungry, they decide to cook some food, and they go and they take some poison and they put it in the pot, and Elisha says, oh, poison in the pot, what's the big deal? And then Elisha says, oh, throw some flour in the pot, and everything is great. Another miracle, right? And then we have another miracle.
We had a miracle last week, too, with the trenches.
Right, so it's supposed to be a double miracle over, right, on Elisha. So the double miracle might be one that, like, they're cooking the food before they gathered.
Last week with the war, when he fills the water.
Yes, so correct. Right, that's what we had last week. Right. Elisha seems to be miracle man. That is point one. And point two that I'd like to ask, at least with respect to this first story, is why do we need the miracle at all? Right? In other words, question one is, don't we usually downplay miracles? Question two is that this miracle seems to be really unnecessary. Let's go through the psukim, and I'll explain to you what I mean. There is a woman, she's the wife of one of the B'nai HaNevi'im, one of these young student prophets. Even Yeshiva University does not yet have a school of prophecy. That might actually help the financial situation. Perhaps we can open one. It would be interesting. What? Yeah, right. So there is one woman who is the wife of one of the student prophets, and she screams out to Elisha to say, "My husband died. You know that Avdecha, that your servant, my husband, was a person who always feared God, and now they're coming to take my two children to be slaves." So Elisha says, "What should I do? Tell me what you have at home." And she says, "The only thing I have is a little bit of oil, asuch shemen. Asuch is a small amount of oil. It's an amount that is necessary to anoint, but not to anoint the entire body. Some of you should understand the amount of oil that can be used to anoint a pinky. That's not so much, no? Oh, actually, I forgot. I'm dedicating tonight's shiur. I should have said this at the beginning. My mother's currently sitting Shiva for her sister, for my aunt. So I just should dedicate this shiur to her memory. Her name was Fegaleya, the daughter of Ze'ev and Brancha Brindle. My aunt was born when my grandmother was 18 years old. They lived in Farakwe. My grandparents lived in Farakwe all the years. My aunt got married at a very young age. She herself was 18 when she got married. She married one of the Altamirers, one of these old fellows who came up from Europe. He was considerably older than my aunt. They had four children together. It wasn't an amazing marriage. Later in life, she married a wonderful man, a man Chaim Kielsen. They were married together for around 25 years. They lived in Bayswater, in Farakwa. Actually, Rabbi Chaim Bronstein, who works in YU, bought my aunt's house. My aunt at that time moved to Male Adumim, and it didn't work in Israel. She's been in Florida the last, 10 years, along with everyone else her age, basically. She was a very... a woman who had great street smarts. She taught nursery school for many years in the Rockaway area. She taught nursery. She took great pride that she taught kids how to read in nursery school. I have to admit that she had a way of making me always feel guilty whenever I called by saying, "How come you haven't called in a while?" She also was really good at knowing every single birthday of everyone in the family, including my kids. Who are like her great nephews and nieces. So this was my aunt Florence Kielsen. She died on Monday morning at age 89. She cared a lot about Jewish identity. Unfortunately, half of her children are not religious. She paid for the Jewish education of her grandchildren.
Kielsen married a Wotelski from Lawrence.
So that's a... yeah, I know. Yeah.
Had a
correct. These are not relatives, although we shared the same uncle and aunt. Because it's the second marriage, right? In other words... They were all at the funeral also. My aunt paid for the Jewish education of her grandchildren, two of her daughters are not religious at all. One of her daughters is a Jews for J at this point, which made the funeral a little more complicated than it had to be. Whatever. Her neshama should have an aliyah. A woman with a lot of spunk. When I'm 89, 90, I want to be as tough as she was, and... So let's learn in her memory a little bit. Okay, so...
Are people still doing Jews for J?
Apparently.
Oh, yeah. I thought that was
over. Whatever. Right. I have to admit, I'm not, so good. She called me over during the Shiva yesterday, and she said she wanted to speak to me because I'm a rabbi. I wasn't really interested in speaking to her. One of my cousins, Tzvi Engel, he's a rabbi in Chicago, so I sent Tzvi to speak with her. have fun.
No sense
whatever.
Of
huh?
No
I don't have to be the family rabbi over here. I'll let Zvi take care of this one. Okay. So basically, the story is that Elisha tells this woman, what do you have at home? She says, I have nothing besides a little bit of oil. Asuch shemen is the amount of oil to like anoint a pinky. And so Elisha says, go borrow many kalim, and borrow from all of your neighbors, empty kalim, and then you'll lock the door, and you will pour on the kalim, and every full vessel you'll take away. So she goes, she locks the door, right, Pasuk Hey, and they bring her all these vessels, and she pours it, and then when the vessels are full, so she tells her son, bring me another vessel. He says, I don't have another one, no more oil. She tells Elisha, Elisha says, sell the oil, and you'll live with what you have. Now, think about this. Is this a pointful miracle? Now, a pointful miracle. You see, someone comes to you, and they say, I'm poor. You know what I do when someone says they're poor? I take out my checkbook, right? And I write a check. And if I don't have enough money, so what I do is I find somebody who could help them, right? Why the heck do you need a miracle? Now, if you're going to tell me that you need a miracle to prove the greatness of God, so why are we doing this with the doors closed? Right, you notice, right? Pasuk Hey, Pasuk Dala, Pasuk Hey, go and lock the door. And
you said prove it to the individual or prove it to the public? It's just for the individual.
Okay, so maybe to prove to the individual. Why would the individual need to be proven to, right? There is something unusual here. There's something unusual in this story. Now, I saw in one of the sperm that I used to prepare, there's a fellow Yigal Ariel in Israel. He has a sefer called Mikdash Melech. So his argument is as follows. Miracles are never done unless there is a real reason. There was a real reason here. The real reason is that we have to look at Chazal. Who was this woman? The wife of Ovadia. Very good. Right? Rashi quotes that, that this woman is the wife of Ovadia. And the person who's coming, this lender who's taking the children away, is Yehoram, who is the son of Achab, who's the king. Right? That's what Rashi learns. Now, how do we know that this woman is the wife of Ovadia? So the answer is, because the Pasuk says that the woman said, you know that my husband feared God. Who is described in Tanakh as someone who feared God? A few people, not too many, only four people in Tanakh. Avram Avinu is one of them. Ata yadati ki yirei Elokim ata. Avram Avinu doesn't kill his son. Another person described as a yirei Elokim is Ovadia. Right? And we had this earlier in Kings 1, chapter 18. I give you the psukim on the other side. Achav tells Ovadia, right? Achav calls Ovadia, who is in charge of Achav's house. The Ovadia haya yareyat Hashem ma'od. Ovadia feared God. How do I know Ovadia feared God? The pasuk says that Ovadia took 100 neviim. Remember, Izebel tried to kill all of the prophets. Ovadia takes 100 prophets, 50 here, 50 there. He hides them, and that required a tremendous amount of Yirah Shemayim. Right? He feared God. Fine. So now let's connect the dots here. Why is it that this woman, who's the wife of Ovadia, Ovadia is now dead, Ovadia's wife has no money. Why do you think she had no money?
Because he gave it all to...
He gave all the money to these Nevi'im. Right? He's supporting a hundred... To support a hundred... It's a big kollel. Right? And he's single-handedly supporting it because no one is collecting any money for this kollel. So, that's why there's no money. Now, this raises a big question. The question is called theodicy. Now, it's a very pointed question of theodicy. Theodicy is tzaddik viralo. It's not just that Ovadia was a tzaddik and suffered, he died young. But it's that the very act of tzedakah that Obadiah did is the cause of the suffering for his wife and the kids. Right? That's a very powerful question. How could it be? Right? This woman comes and she's screaming to Elisha. She's saying, hey, man of God, how could it be that my husband, precisely because of the tzedakah that he did, right? That's why I'm in these dire straits. That's not proper. So maybe he wasn't so great. That's basically the question. By the way, that's not a way that we try to answer Tzaddik Viralo questions, no? The tradition of Tzaddik Viralo doesn't answer the question by saying, oh, he really wasn't such a tzaddik. Right? That's not the traditional answer.
It's a friend's of evil. That's their answer.
Right, exactly. Maybe you had.
But his behavior is very questionable.
Huh?
His behavior is very questionable.
His behavior is, on the one hand, very questionable. On the other hand, I think we look at it very laudably.
I don't.
No?
No, not the way you're putting it here. You know, there's a. You'll excuse me quoting the quote in the Testament you did just mention, JJ. You know, somebody said that it is not right to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs. It is not right
That's exactly the complaint that the wife had.
And
Elisha's response to her is, listen, close the door. Let me tell you a secret. And the secret is Hashem protects his own. Right? Lo ra'isi tzadik nezov v'zaro mevakesh lachem.
But she comes
to Elisha and she's yelling, and Elisha says, close the door, I've got a secret to tell you. The secret is that you are going to witness a miracle. Now, there's another dimension over here, which is fascinating also. Why does Elisha say, I want you to collect Kalim from everyone? What's gained by this? If I want a miracle, right? And again, it's not enough to just collect money, because she doesn't just want money. She wants to know that Hashem is taking care, right? But why do you need to collect Kalim? Why can't you just have one Kalim that keeps on getting bigger or something? Why do you have to collect Kalim from the whole town? So the answer might be that Elisha is giving Musar to the community. He's saying, I want everybody to chip in and to lend something, to lend a Kaylee, to realize that you guys had a responsibility to this Ovadia and his family. Especially, remember, Ovadia protected the B'nai HaNevi'im. Elisha's main student is that same group, B'nai HaNevi'im. Right? Presumably, she's living in the community of B'nai HaNevi'im. Everyone is lending their vessels, as if Elisha's saying, you know what, guys? Listen, you should have been taking care of her better. You shouldn't have allowed this to happen. But, at the same time, you guys are not going to be the ones to witness the great miracle, because what you have to learn is that you're supposed to chip in. What she has to learn is that God will protect even with miracles. That's why it's done in private. Again, this is my interpretation of the story, based on, again, what I saw in the Sefer of Yigal Ariel, which I actually think is correct. Yeah.
It's a bit ironic, because the next story, I think they had, and Elisha asked the woman, what could I do for you? Just
nothing!
Because why? Because the Sol Chami and the Yosha, right? So
they're the people are taking care,
yes, so
and I don't need, right, and that's precisely the point. In other words, I don't need any special, right? That's part of the Rosh Hashanah idea. B'socha mi'anochi yoshavas. Don't single yourself out, right? Oh. Good. Now, the fact is that Chazal say, the end of Perek Gimel, if you remember, is that the king of Moab is in dire straits. He takes his oldest son and he brings him as a carbon on the wall. Vayhi ketzef gadol al Yisrael. The Perek Gimel ended that God is angry at the Jews. But we don't see the result of that anger. The Medrash Tanhuma writes that the person who prevented this anger from accomplishing something was Esha Sovadia, this woman over here. And the way she did that, Chazal say, is unclear. They just say that she prevented the anger. There was supposed to be Ketzef, but the next pasuk says, this woman came to Elisha and that prevented the anger. It could be that she prevented the anger because, technically speaking, she should have been really angry at her husband. You see, if you have a husband and he's giving all the money away to these B'nai Hanavim, so much so that you're wiped out.
Yes.
So you should be really angry at your husband, right?
Yes.
But she doesn't do that. What she does is she goes to Elisha. Elisha himself was one of those people who was rescued by Ovadia. Mm-hmm. And she goes to Elisha and says, okay, Elisha, dude, make good. Like, it's not anger directed at her husband. She recognizes that her husband is a Yirei Elokim, etc. She just says, Elisha, what's going on? I have a question of theodicy.
Why should he be cast on the soil? Because of the trust they committed by the king of Moab.
So we spoke about that briefly last week, and that's probably because of the Mesiris Nefesh that they had to sacrifice their own son, and God is saying, look, the Goyim are willing to do this, and the Jewish people, they don't even do the basic mitzvos that's required of them. It does take a degree of Mesiris Nefesh to kill your own son, even though we look askance at human sacrifice, obviously. But, fine. Now, are you allowed to take children if you're owed money? How do you understand this story? Right? The lender is going to come and he will take away my children. And they're going to be slaves. Because I owe money. I've heard of debtor's prison.
Yeah.
I heard of Australia. Right? I didn't hear of taking children away. And I don't think it works like that. In part because we believe that children are not the monetary property of their parents. No? There is no concept in Judaism of taking children to pay up loans. V'nimkar b'gnevato. Right? Velo b'chovo. Right? I can't be sold into slavery if I owe money. I can be sold if I stole. Right? And I can't become a slave because my parents did something wrong in halacha. So, this might be one of the sources that the person who's taking away is Yehoram, the son of Ahav, who don't believe in nothing. Right? That seems to be fine. Now, turn to page 2, or the back page of this sheet. We see an episode with Eliyahu Hanavi that's very similar to this episode with Elisha. And that's episode of the woman in Tsarfatit, right? Hashem speaks to Eliyahu and says, go to Tsarfas, there's a woman who'll support you. He goes to Tsarfas, and there is a woman who's Mikosheshes Eitzim. She's gathering wood. And Eliyahu calls her and says, take a little bit, give me some water so I'll drink. And she goes to take water. Then he calls her and says, "Nu, get some bread for me." So she says, listen, I don't have anything. I don't even have a tiny amount of dough for myself. Right? All I have is a little bit of flour and oil, and I'm going to get some wood, and I'll make a cake, and then we'll die. Because I'm really poor. So Eliyahu says, you know what? Make a little cake for me. Give me a little bit of the cake. And then make one for you. Because God said that this oil and this flour won't run out. And rain will come. Right? In other words, the famine is really bad. And Eliyahu says, give me a little bit of cake, and there's a miracle. That kara kemach lo choloso tzapachas hadvash lo choser kidvar Hashem eshedibir biyad Eliyahu. No? That's the miracle. That the oil and the flour don't run out. Isn't that very similar to our story, that the oil doesn't run out? But there are a few differences. And the differences are as follows. One, we mentioned already, Elisha is a social navi. He's involved in the community. So Elisha's miracle involves collecting kalim from everybody to get everyone involved somehow. Eliyahu don't do that. What's the other big difference between the story of Eliyahu and the story of Elisha? Big difference.
He takes from it also.
What?
Not only does he also take from it,
he takes first. He says, give me, right? Eliyahu is doing a miracle, as it were, for him. Elisha is doing a miracle for her. Right? That's very different, no? The difference between an Eliyahu and an Elisha can be, there's a point that Rav Putner makes in his Ma'amarim on Yom Kippur, actually, that sometimes through the similarities you notice the extent of the differences. Right? That's his famous piece about the Shnei HaSeirim. One is the Seir LaHashem, one is the Seir LaHazazel. The Pasuk says, the Mishnah says, that they have to be exactly the same. And you notice the difference by noticing all the similarities. So we see the similarity in the story, but the difference is most striking in that Eliyahu's a Navi out for himself, as it were. Elisha's out for everyone else. But there's more to it. Eliyahu's approach is, either you are for Baal or you're with me. If you don't give it to me, that proves that you're a Baal person. Elisha's approach is much more kind, generous, to help the people, no? It's much less, right, remember, Eliyahu is stopping all the water. We point out that Elisha makes water come, right? There's a huge difference between the personalities. There's also a huge difference, and this is a point that Rabbi Alex Israel makes in his Sefer. There's a huge difference between the time when Eliyahu lives and the time when Elisha lives. Eliyahu lives at a time of tremendous prosperity. Ahav is the king. Everything is great politically. No? The country is expanding. Everything, it's bad in Avodah Zarah territory, but politically everything is grand. When Elisha's the prophet, what the king is being threatened by Aram and by Moab, and things are dangerous. Perhaps because of the prosperity that was going on in the nation, Eliyahu says, I can give them fire and brimstone. But when they're suffering, you realize that you can't make them suffer too much. And the fire and brimstone approach of Eliyahu doesn't work. That's a suggestion that Rabbi Alex Israel has, which is also very interesting, no? Fine.
You have to look at things in context.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, one other point. We'll start with one and then maybe we'll do more. It depends on my mood. Now, the lesson of the fear is that you're supposed to turn off your ringer before you begin shear.
Scream.
Huh?
Just scream.
Now, the other lesson is that Chazal say, the Zohar has, that Elisha asked, is there any amount of oil that you have? Or do you have anything at home? And she said, I have a tiny amount of oil. And that tiny amount of oil grew. And it became the huge amount to support this woman and her, right, and her sons. The Zohar comments that bracha does not fall on nothing. Right? It has to be chal on something. And this is a halacha that's little known and even littler observed, called the shiurei hapas, the psisei hapas. You're not allowed to remove all the pieces of bread from the table before benching. Right? You're supposed to leave the bread on the table when you bench, because of the bracha, birkas hamazon, that comes and it's to support the growth. It has to be chal on something. Right.
This is
used by the Taz to answer the question as to how come we have 8 days of Hanukkah when there's only 7 days of the miracle. So the Taz answered that, no, it wasn't 7 days of miracle. There's a miracle even on day one. The miracle on day one was that usually to burn all night, you need to use up the entire contents of the jug of oil. But if they would have used up all the contents of the jug, there'd be no oil left, and then there'd be nothing left to have a miracle for days two, three, four. So day one, also not everything burned. And that was the miracle. Right? So the Taz is using this principle of the Zohar, which is based on these Psukim of Elisha, to emphasize that bracha and miracles are only chal when you have something. And this is a principle that I remember when I was in college, Professor Yaakov Ellman told us, is called the principle of conservation of prophetic energy. The first principle of metaphysics. Right? Now, conservation of prophetic energy means that we're not going to do a super-duper gigundous miracle if you could do a miracle that involves less prophetic energy. A miracle that's yesh miyesh, a miracle that takes something that's here and just allows it to last longer, doesn't appear to the outsider as being as great as a miracle that's yesh me'ayin. So that is part of when I say that in Judaism we downplay miracles, right? Part of the downplaying miracles in this episode is that the door is closed. Part of the it's done in private. Part of the downplaying of miracles is the conservation of prophetic energy, which is that we're not doing a miracle yesh me'ayin. Yesh me'yesh is, again, people can come up with like another English word that sounds Yiddish, far-fetched explanations for how can it be? Well, maybe there was something in the oil that allowed it to last longer and it burned, right? You know, people can come with some explanations, right? So that's the point I think that we're trying to make, again, in terms of minimizing the miracles. Usually we finish around 9:30. Do people want to continue for a few more minutes and talk about Shunem, or should we break and do it next week? Votes? We can continue going. Okay, we can continue going a little bit.
The man is young, so are we.
The night is young, and so are some of us. I don't consider myself young anymore. Okay. But so Pasuk Ches, it's right after the break. So Elisha goes to Shunem, and in Shunem there is this great woman who grabs onto Elisha to eat bread, and whenever he goes by, so Elisha eats there, and she tells her husband, I recognize that this Esh Elokim is very holy, he always comes to us, let's make him a small room. By the way, the definition of a room is a place that has mita, shulchan, and kisei, and menorah. That's the amount of furniture that you need. A bed, a table, a chair, and a lamp. Yeah, that's all you need. Right? And whenever Elisha would come, he could go there. And then Elisha goes to the Aliyah. Apparently the husband agreed. The husband seems to be like this mute fellow. She's like doing all of the action. And he's a guy. I don't know. So when Elisha comes there, he goes to the attic. And then Elisha tells Gehazi to call the Shunammite. And he calls her, and Gehazi says, like, what should we do to you? You did all this exciting stuff for us. You built the room. What should we do to you? Should we speak to the king? Should we speak to the general? She says, nothing. We just spoke about this pasuk a few minutes ago. So then Elisha says to Gehazi, what should we do? Gehazi says she has no child. It's interesting that in this entire perek, Elisha is using Gehazi as the intermediary. No? Elisha is not speaking directly to the woman. Gehazi is. Apparently what's going on over here is that Elisha is a charismatic figure, and there are more and more B'nai HaNevi'im that are joining him. And as he has more and more students, and he gets busier and busier, so he needs to have an office of the prophet. And the office of the prophet has a chief of staff called Gehazi. So Gehazi is doing the work for Elisha, right? Now this in some ways is a problem And the Navi is pointing out with the downfall of Gehazi, who does not turn out to be a very great figure, the Navi is pointing out maybe that the role of a prophet is not to use intermediaries. A Navi is supposed to interact with the people directly. Navi, right, you speak to the woman. You know what's going on, right, with the common folk. To the extent that you are in your office and you have these little shikyingos around who are doing stuff for you, that's not appropriate.
Well, when he sends Gehazi to revive the child, it doesn't work.
It sends Gehazi to revive the child, it doesn't work because Navi, you got to do it yourself.
Right.
Your job as a Navi, right, is not to use Gehazi, and fine. That's one point. Now, it's interesting that Elisha doesn't have the idea to give her a child. It's Gehazi's idea. And Elisha then tells her, right, oh, a year from now you're going to have a child. And she says, don't lie to me, don't joke around, like, come on. Right? And then she becomes pregnant, she has a child, at the same time that Elisha said to her. Now, this story is very reminiscent of
Yitzchak.
What?
Sarah, Abram and Sarah.
Abram and Sarah. And in fact, this is the Haftorah of Parashas Vayera. Now, the parallel is striking. A barren woman is told, you're going to have a child a year from now. She has a child. And, right, in both cases, by the way, they're like standing at the door. The language is the same. Lamo eid hazaka eid chaya. Right? The language is the same. The story in Parshas Vayera almost ends with the child dying, but it just gets away. Right? Over here, the story ends with the child dying but coming back. Right? Very similar. Very similar, and that's probably why it was instituted as the Haftorah. But there are big differences. You see, over here, the child actually dies. There, the child doesn't die. That's a big difference. Why? Why is it the child dies here? So you can look at this in two ways. I'm just trying to go slightly quickly. Alex is on his article on this perek. One way that he looks at it, he quotes from... one way that he looks at it is his take from Rabbi Chanan Samet. Rabbi Samet writes that the reason why the child died is because the Shunammit did something wrong. You see, if you're promised a child and God finally gives you a miracle baby, your responsibility should be to take this miracle baby child and to raise him to serve Hashem. Very similar to like Shmuel. Right? But she doesn't do that. The one thing we know about the way this kid is raised is that he's hanging out with daddy and he's working in the fields. Pasuk Yudches. Vayigdal hayeled, vayitei al aviv al hakotrim. He grows up. He doesn't go to yeshiva. He doesn't go to the Beis HaMikdash. He goes to the field to work. And maybe, says Rav Elchanan Samet, the punishment in the story is to this woman, this Shunammit, that listen, you have miracle baby here, right? Tachlis, you gotta, right, train him better. That's
oh,
definitely, right? At least when you have a miracle baby, the sit in line graph is appropriate, right? Maybe not for everyone.
Baby isn't the miracle baby.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
That Yitzchak died too?
There is a tradition that his ashes are still on the Mizbeach, yeah. I don't know if he died or, right, that there's no Zechira by Yitzchak, because it doesn't have to be Zechira, because he's up there still.
And then he died the Akedah.
Yeah, I understand.
Yes.
Yeah. There's another approach here, that the story is of the death of the baby is not a message to the Shunammit, but it's a message to Elisha.
Uh-huh.
You see, the pasuk in Vayera, Lamoed Hazaka Eid Chaya, right? That Hashem said to her. That's the pasuk in Vayera. Over here it says, Lamoed Hazaka Eid Chaya, Asher Diber Elaha Elisha. Elisha apparently feels that I'm able to do miracles all the time. So he said, okay, Gehazi says you have a baby. Okay, you'll have a baby. He's a baby. So Hashem, in some ways, has to give Elisha a little bit of Musar. Elisha, miracles aren't because of you. Right? The miracles are coming, right, because of me. Elisha didn't even pray to Hashem. No? Elisha doesn't pray to Hashem at all. Okay, what do you need? Okay, Gehazi says she needs a baby. Fine, give her a baby next year. No prayer, no nothing. Right? God needs to tell Elisha a message. Elisha, we don't do it like that. Right? Miracles only come about because of prayer. To prove that to Elisha, the child dies. After the child dies, right? After the child dies, Pasuk Chav Zayin says that the woman says, I don't want Gehazi to do anything, Elisha, you have to do stuff. She's like grabbing onto Elisha. Right? Gehazi goes to push her away. And Elisha says, Harpela, go soft on her. Kinaf Shamarala, she's bitter. V'Hashem Helim Mimeni V'lo Higidli. And God didn't tell me what to do. Elisha has to acknowledge that Hashem didn't tell him stuff. And then, finally, when Elisha goes to revive the baby, first Gehazi doesn't work. Right? Gehazi comes with this stick. Elisha apparently still felt that maybe there's some miraculous power in his stick that can revive the baby. Says, okay, Gehazi, take the stick, revive the baby. That don't work. What works is prayer. Right? Well, when Elisha goes and he prays, that works. Because this story might be more a message to Elisha than it is to anyone else. And the message to Elisha is, kid, right? Elisha, I don't know if he's a kid, he's a prophet. Elisha, right? The miracles that come about are coming about because of me, because of the Ribbono Shel Olam, not because of you. So again, this is just the shortened version of what could have taken much longer. But thank you for listening, and have a good night.